It's that time of week, the time you've been waiting for. It's time for Goat Gab, a weekly podcast about all things in the dairy goat industry. Sit back and enjoy an hour or so with your hosts, Laura Warren Hughes and Cameron Jedlowski, as we talk about ideas and topics that matter to the dairy goat world. Welcome, Goat Gabbers, to another wonderful edition of Goat Gab. We're so glad that you're joining us. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Laura Warren Hughes.
And I'm the other co-host, Cameron Jedlowski. This week, we are joined by a very special guest, all the way from not-so-sunny California this time of the year, a partner in the Redwood Hills, owner of the Vineyard View herd as well there. Scott by Scott, I'm missing all of your titles there.
A little too many, but yeah, thanks for having me. Just got back from hauling the milk to the creamery and glad to talk goats while enjoying a tasty beverage before I go back out in the rain and do chores. So thanks for having me.
So truck driver is also part of your resume as well.
Yeah, definitely a truck driver. And I definitely have snacks in there, truck driver snacks for the road, which you know is important.
Absolutely.
And what is the snack of choice, Mr. Weiss?
Well, I'm trying to be a little healthier, so I've gone to like beef jerky, like high protein, you know, low fat. So I found a good version of beef jerky that I enjoy.
Excellent. Scott, do you want to do a more formal introduction of yourself for the listeners there?
Okay, yeah. Well, my name's Scott Bice, and I'm the farm manager here at Redwood Hill Farm in Sebastopol, California. We have a dairy, and we milk about 85 goats. It's a family business started by my parents in the 1960s. My sister, Jennifer Bice, that many of you may know, she is the owner of the farm. And yeah, I'm the herd manager. And yeah, we do diversified farming too, a little bit of agritourism. With the Redwood Hill Farm brand is yogurt and kefir that's sold throughout the country. Although the creamery was sold, we still own the farm dairy and goats.
Gotcha. So there is a difference between what the farm does and then the creamery side, correct?
That is correct. Little bit involved still, but now we are a milk producer, so we still ship our milk to the creamery, but definitely separate businesses. So if you look at us on, say, Facebook, you might see the name Capricopia. So that's the official name of our farm now. But we're still doing business as, you know, Redwood Hill Farm. And of course we have the herd name Redwood Hill Farm and all that.
Gotcha. Thank you for that distinction, because I think some people might get confused, especially when they look in the Facebook world.
Yeah, it can be confusing. And also for the semi-truck drivers that drive their semis here thinking we're the creamery on our little back road. And, we have to have a hay squeeze, get them out of here, because, they can't get turned around. So,
oh, yuck. That would be bad, especially in the mud, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I'm supposed to deliver these 10 pallets of this. It's like, no, you got the wrong address.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, before we dive into our topic here, Laura, what is happening at your place?
Well, as of today, we have kitted out 11 of our 18 to freshen this year. So we have a chalkboard in the kitchen that had all the, you know, the does on it. So it's fun to see us on the downhill side of that. And that's a little unusual for us because we don't usually kit out that many in February, but it just kind of happened to happen that way this year. So our count right now is 19. We've had 19 bucks and 12 does. So yeah, not too bad.
Excellent. And Laura, you should be coming up on your convention week, correct? Where no goats were bred, right?
Right. So I have two more due. I had one, yeah, that kitted today. I have two more due this week. And then we have a nice little break until the end of the month. So hopefully during that break, we're going to be sending some milking does to their new homes and some doe kids and some buck kids to their new homes and be really sold down to a nice number for the last the last few to go. So that it feels good. It's just right now around our house, everybody's a little bit short on sleep and a little short on temper because this is a stretch for us. It's just a lot. Chores take a lot longer than we're all a little comfortable with. So yeah. And the other problem is I've been traveling a little bit for work. So that means that all of it falls on one person when I'm gone. So God bless my daughter, Elizabeth, for kicking in there and helping, and then Caroline on the weekend. So, everybody knows how that goes. So, I did want to share one thing. I don't know about everybody else. I don't always talk goats. I know maybe that's a surprise, but I was flying back from Washington, D.C., and there was a lady in the Southwest Airlines line with me that had a t-shirt on that said something about 4-H livestock, and it had a goat and a rabbit and sheep and different critters on it. And I asked her about that, and she's from Kansas, and she and her family show steers, and then they also show rabbits. And I found out that she is a friend of your friend and mine, Josh Campbell.
Oh. So,
it was just weird to see somebody like that, you know, in Washington, D.C. So we were talking, and she was talking about livestock shows and how much work they are, but how what a good way it is to raise kids, like human kids. And that she really felt like that her kids got a good start in life and learned a good work ethic from having livestock. And two other people were standing there in line, and they're like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to jump into your conversation, but I grew up showing cattle too. And I agree. I think it's the best thing. And it was just kind of fun that here in at Reagan Airport in Washington, D.C., we had a bunch of Midwest livestock people talking about how cool livestock is. So it's kind of fun.
Nice.
Yeah, that's really cool there. And awesome to hear that your goats are making friends across the United States.
Yeah. Well, kind of, yeah. So it was just fun. But yeah, of course we had to take a selfie and send it to Josh and say, hey, do you know this person? You know, kind of a thing. It was fun. Yeah. So yeah.
Scott, what's happening in rainy California?
Yeah, same here. Lots of goat kidding. We had our first kind of big rush of kidding. We like to get as much as we can done early, because there's a lot, you know, when during breeding season, we kind of wait, and there's all the, you know, the yearlings that, you know, are going to be the first freshing two-year-olds that we want to get bred right away, and, you know, some milk-throughs or maybe a few problem goats that aren't milking that great. So we want to get them bred pretty early. So our first, and they seem to all cycle all at once that first big time. So we had, I think, 25 goats kid in the last 10 days. And, so yeah, it's been busy here, and I get what you're saying, Lorik, about, you know, it's always, you know, we have, you know, it's obviously it's not me doing it. We have a great crew, but it's always, you know, it goes from like 0 to 50 quick, because it's kind of like dead winter and not much to, you know, full workload. So it's always that transition. But yeah, it's nice, you know, lots of nice first freshing udders. There's four runs full of baby goats, and kind of full steam ahead. So we're going to have I think three due in the next couple of days. And then we do have a week break, which is nice. So we'll try to get a milk test in. And we really, with this, all this rain we've been having, the barns have really built up. So hopefully we'll get some dry weather so we can get a barn clean too.
I know we're going to talk about selection later, but I have a quick question for you, because this is like top of mind around my house. Do you have a good buyer situation for your unwanted buck kids?
Yeah, we do. There's a couple guys, you know, we're a creamery. We still go to our creamery for, you know, a few reasons, but one of the big reasons is that we feed our babies goat yogurt from our creamery. So quality control samples and good yogurt that they would just maybe give to pig farmers or eventually throw away when it's out of date, we can go there and collect it. And it's a pasteurized product full of probiotics. But But anyways, there's a few guys there that know and are willing to take the extra buck kids and, you know, raise them up. So we do have an outlet there.
So when you say you feed your baby goats yogurt, like you pan feed it to them or they...
We feed a lamb bar. So we feed them first. They get colostrum out of a bottle, heat treated colostrum. But then after that, we train them on mother bucket, the lamb bar with the nipples. And we do feed yogurt and kefir. Kefir is basically, for the few listeners that don't know, like a drinkable yogurt with more live active cultures than yogurt generally. And it's a little bit thinner too. So, but you know, a lot of people think of yogurt as really thick, but really when you heat it up and the process that we get it, we can thin it down. And we do, like our hand milkers, we milk them for so many days before they can go in the bulk tank. So we'll mix that in to thin it out too, so that they can easily suck it up through the straws.
Very interesting. That's, wow, very cool.
Yeah, you know, I had to text my wife on that. She's not going to believe that.
Yeah, it was actually one of the, when we first built, when the creamery was first built in like 2005, before we had our cheese plant there, but we had another company co-pack our yogurt, you know, it was our recipe and we'd ship the milk. But once we opened up our own yogurt plant, we were new and we had new machine or, used machines that, you know, and we were learning on the thing. We had a few bad batches, let's just say. They weren't bad, but they just, you know, didn't have the right consistency to, you know, go out in the market. So we had the idea, well, let's feed it to the baby goats. And, you know, back in those days, prior to that, we were feeding milk replacer like a lot of, you know, big dairies are, you know, selling their milk do. But I never really liked the milk replacer. I mean, we had bloat problems and a few other things. I'm sure the milk replacers are a lot better nowadays, but you know, we had a few issues with it. So as soon as we got the yogurt, just the gains and the overall health of the goats was really great. A lot less scours. So even though the creamery was sold, I told Jennifer, I don't know if it's officially, but right in the contract, we could always go pick up the yogurt for our baby goats because they really thrive and I really like feeding it.
Yeah, that's blows my mind. I never would have guessed, but that is a great way to use a byproduct or waste product of that. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And it saves money. So then we don't have to pull it out of the bulk tank. So it's good.
Cameron.
Yeah.
What is going on at your farm?
Yeah. So we had more kids born yesterday, late into the night. We were joking about how many movies we were going to watch while we were waiting for this first freshener to kid. But unfortunately we just finished the first and then we were good to go on that. But we also did our first round of cleaning, which is cleaning the kid pens. I think that's so important. And I hate doing it, but it's one of those tasks that you feel so much better after you strip the kid pens out, you get it all cleaned and all nice there on that. So we did that as well. Completed my farm taxes for 2023 and shipped those off to my accountant, which is not the most exciting thing ever to talk about, but is a necessary evil of doing that Schedule F for the farm there. And then took a little trip and acquired some new assets and looking forward to 2025.
Sounds like a productive week.
Yeah, I'm sitting here. I've got like three spreadsheets open. I'm already working on my expenses already for 2024 and getting them all organized and trying to be better about that. I got my DHIR sheet all ready to go and get that shipped off to the tester as soon as we're ready to start our test, which we've got that scheduled already. And then we've got my giant – I'm a spreadsheet nerd, so I've got my giant spreadsheet with all my goats and my tattoos filled in and what's going to happen with them, like they're going to be sold or weathered or XYZ there on that. And then we've got our breeding worksheet, as I call it, too, that's filled out with our prediction on our fetal counts and then what actually happens there on that. And I would like the world to know that my wife is at 90% correct on her fetal counts. So I'm very happy to tell the world that.
Nice. So Cameron, one of the spreadsheet nerd, that's one of my first images of getting to know you was we were judging, I believe, in Texas. And
yes,
we met in the lobby. And you were on a spreadsheet, like figuring all your expenses and all organized. I was like, man, this guy is organized. I need to get like that.
My accountant, who's my mom, built this spreadsheet for my dad for when he was judging goats. So I just fill that all out every time I go to a goat show. And I thoroughly enjoy spreadsheets. I've probably looked at like five of them today on my personal computer there on that. But most importantly, that's how me and my wife can communicate as well there. And one thing that we really like to do on our breeding worksheet is we track every single time we service a goat, which may come in handy here, knock on wood, but we'll see on the next episode if that's going to come true or not. So I'll have to tell you guys off the podcast what could happen.
Cameron, I would think that this judge's expense spreadsheet would be something that any judge would be interested in.
Yes, but they would need to talk to how they do their accountant, how their accountant does their taxes, or how they roll that up into their 1099, I do believe. So they would need to figure that out with their own personal accountant. That's what I would tell you, just for liability reasons. But if you have any interest in your judge, let me know. I can definitely send it to you. And Scott, I can send it to you as well.
Cool.
Do we have any ADGA news?
Well, congratulations, Scott, on your selection to become an ADGA National Show judge. You're already a licensed judge.
Yes, good. I had my license since I'm going to. But yeah, quite an honor to be selected. I've been eligible for a few years, but we always kind of leave it open to maybe go because we have driven cross country before. But we decided pretty early on that we weren't. So I thought I'd throw my hat in, and yeah, I'm super excited to judge.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we'll be waited with bated breath for the selection of who is going to judge what, and then the schedule, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be a great show. But I have to say, Cameron, because you're pretty young still, and Laura, you're young at heart, and all of our younger exhibitors, I guess I'm getting soft in my old age, but I would just say, go if you have the opportunity to go to a nationals or even drive. I know it's expensive, but go for it, because we have some of the greatest memories. But now, I guess I'm just getting soft because I'm thinking like, oh, I don't know if I could do it anymore. I don't even like driving around our hometown at night, let alone cross I-80 in the dark and perpetual construction zone. So. But it's quite an experience, but an undertaking to drive across the country.
Yes. I couldn't believe that your first national show was like 2005 when I saw your Facebook post, Scott.
Yeah. Yeah. I came back to the farm in 2001 to work for Jennifer, and they did go to nationals with her and current herd manager, Marty Holzhauser. They went to Colorado. I think that was 2002 or so. And I didn't go to that one, but 2005 was my first show, and God, that was a fun show.
Yeah, it is a good time. And I echo Scott's words there. My wife's first national show was just about 8 years ago. Now she's been to 3 or 4 ever since, but she's like, the first time I got hooked, and it's a good drug to go to. I'll tell you, but it can be expensive.
I was talking to my daughter about our podcast guest this week, and we were reminiscing about the first national show that she went to, which was 2010. She was pretty little, but we talked about the Colorama sale that year, and our favorite goat by far was the Redwood Hills Doe that was in that Colorama sale. Was just so pretty and just so elegant. And I said, yeah, I said, do you remember when we walked through the barn? And I can still see in my mind's eye where all of the Redwood Hills animals were that year. And I said, and just, we were just so astonished that you came so far for that national show. And I think that's one of the neat things about a national show is when you see these herds that have truly traveled across the country to compete, you're in the big game now. This is pretty awesome.
Yeah. I remember, I remember all the, I have a terrible memory. I couldn't tell you what I did 3 days ago, but I have so many memories of all the national show. And that 2010, I mean, that was quite an undertaking. I believe it was Trinity Malmanis or Trinity Smith and Ben Repkus that went across, and I still have very fond memories of that show. And And like I just like traveling across the country too. It's, you know, it's pretty amazing to be able to do it. And like we said, it's an expense and time away from the farm, but like just that experience. And like, I saw fireflies for the first time and I haven't seen them since, but fireflies are pretty cool. You know, just like little things like that, you know, you remember on trips like that. So definitely well worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. There. Well, thinking about the national show and thinking about which goats you should take or shouldn't take there on that, let's move on to our kind of our main topic here and talk about selection. And we're going to talk about how we can select goats in our herd to take us forward here today. You know, we've talked in our past on this podcast ad nauseum about culling, culling, culling. But really, the basis of culling is you need to select who's going to go and who's going to stay there. And I think it's really important that we focus on selecting the correct type to move forward instead of just focusing on looking at the goats that need to go to the wayside in order for progress to happen. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, the future and the positive, yeah.
Yes, absolutely there on that. So I like Scott, thank you for agreeing to come on here. And I love this because you guys are a commercial dairy and you guys do ship milk, correct?
Yeah, we ship milk to our creamery. So milk production, our motto is the winning combination of milkability and showability. So definitely into production.
And you guys have a couple different herds there as well, correct?
Yes, we do. So Redwood Hill Farm, we have the Redwood Hill Alpines and Nubians, excuse me. And Jennifer Bryce, my sister, is the breeder there. Also, the Compañeros Saanens are owned by Jennifer as well. They're in memory. They hold the Compañeros herd name, which is her late partner, Stephen Shack, who was very prominent in breeding Saanens as well as Toggenbergs. And he had some Alpines too, but Saanens were kind of his big breeds. So she kept, in honor of him, kept the herd name for her Saanens, the Compañeros. And then Vineyard View, my herd, I have Saanens and La Manchas, a couple grades, and my son's Colton's goats are in that collection. And then our herd manager is Krista Myers. So we have her Casimir La Manchas on the herd. And then also our good friend Carrie Paulson. She's Fairy Tale Farm Alpines. And we have she just has a two or three milkers and a few dry stock on the farm.
Yeah, that's five herds and a lot to balance there with those five, correct?
Yeah, it is. It's a lot to balance. It's on tattoo days. You're often, you know, changing out the tattoo gun with the different herd tattoos a lot. So it is, and it does make it hard to, you know, for selection and keeping because, you know, you can only retain so many. And so it makes selection, you know, a little difficult, but it's nice to have. We all have our favorites and it makes it fun for the shows because we all kind of have our own breeds and it makes shows like the national show exhausting because it feels like you are pretty much showing every day.
I know what you're talking about there between the four breeds that we have. So I understand that completely. but I want to ask you about that there. How do you get the balance between those five different herds there? Is it like a mathematical formula? Is it like we're looking at just overall quality of the herd based on any type of breed? Like, where is that at?
Yeah, good question. You know, it's evolved and changed over time. You know, when I first started and the cheese plant was still on site, we did milk, you know, well over 200 on our little farm. And so back then there was more of a case and we milk year round and we need winter milk. So, you know, there could be goats that were maybe not the top show quality, but they're really, really good producers and could milk through for 2-3 years and provide milk in the winter months while the others were, you know, pregnant and dry. But nowadays we've really, you know, kind of downsized and the hopes to say, you know, feed and labor gets more expensive every year. So we really try to cut down to a more manageable herd for, you know, cost savings and get more financial sustainability. So it does make it hard. And we are kind of like putting numbers more so like, okay, this is how many we can keep to, you know, kind of, because it's hard because everybody wants to keep so many, especially when you have like, say, a doe kid year and keeping doe kids and that.
This is really good to hear because my husband just said today, you guys have four chiefs and you need more Indians because everybody has their own ideas of who stays and who goes and, you know, a case for what your decision is. And I would imagine that, especially with the extreme talent, I mean, I think about all of you that you named that have animals there. They're all, I mean, we've got judges and appraisers and, you know, so much wisdom. It's got to be quite interesting when you all sit down and decide who, you know, who makes the cut and who doesn't and how that goes. I would love to be a fly on the wall for those kind of discussions.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, we generally, I think, you know, have had a lot of experience and the more time we spent together and we all have the same goals, right? You know, a productive goat that'll last a long time. And we might have our own little quirks or certain things that we like to a certain degree, but it actually, a lot of it works out, you know, on its own. There could be the occasional, like, you know, whether it's my gut intuition or some things that you fight, but we're all willing to, you know, talk it out and make sure, you know, we're all doing for the best of the herd.
So is it like a meeting of the minds where you bring everybody together and you talk about it? Or like is it just you guys just sitting down in the parlor and being like, this one's got to go, this one can stay? You know, like how does that, I guess, like, I don't want to ask like what the process is because everybody's got a different process. But like, how do you come to a consensus between everybody?
Yeah, well, I mean, really there's, you know, you know, Jennifer's really great. I mean, she's the owner and she allows all of our herds to kind of live at Redwood Hill. So, but she, you know, if it's your herd, you get the choice, you know, I mean, you just can't, you know, obviously keep every single goat. So it's really, you know, between the owned herds, we're kind of keeping, our own goats and making our own decisions. Jennifer, back in the heyday of the creamery, you know, when she was so busy building that creamery, she did a lot. It was more of like maybe myself and the herd managers doing the Redwood Hill decisions. But now that she's what she likes to say, semi-retired, she is getting more involved with the decisions on her goats, which is great to see because, you know, she built the creamery to be able to have a life in goats, a long life. Not to, you know, have this nationwide yogurt brand, but because she wanted a career in dairy goats. And that was the thing that made it possible. So it's nice to see her enjoying her breeding program once again and getting more involved. But, you know, getting back to your question, we all take input from each other. And even now, and even 10, 15 years ago, when there was other workers here, like the late Steve Considine, who had goats here and, you know, various other employees that helped manage the herd. You know, it was never just one person, but a more of a collaborative effort. And I think that's one of the main reasons that, you know, we've had pretty good continued success over the years where, you know, there is some back and forth and really the meeting of the minds to, you know, we all have that same goal, but to work towards it.
So would you say that having more people there to discuss ideas and bounce them off has helped you make selection, not easier because selection is never easy, but at least more focused towards the future?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I do believe there can be sometimes too many chiefs, but but it's just, you know, really a core of when it's two or three people, I think that's really good because you can really bounce things off. And getting back to the national show, I think that's when it's a great thing to have a consulting judge because, you know, although there's one primary decision maker, just like, you know, in each of our herds, like I'm the primary of Vineyard View, I can bounce things off Krista, or I can bounce things off Jennifer, and vice versa. So I think it really helps in the success of the decision making.
So Scott, when you start looking at the animals to select, and you had mentioned something earlier that I found interesting, it sounds like that you try to kit out those first freshening 2 year olds fairly early in your kitting season. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes. So we will freshen quite a bit as milking yearlings, and we do have an out of season breeding program. So we will breed here in April. So we will have goats kitting right around the 1st of October. And a lot of those so they're basically yearlings kitting at roughly 18 months of age, which I really like. It gives us more winter milk, and I think it's a really great body size for them to first kit out. But the goats that don't take in those, and on national show years especially, we do like to show dry yearlings, so we'll keep a few back on purpose to breed as first freshening 2 year olds. But definitely want to get them fresh early, because really they're living, they're just kind of walking around the barn eating hay and really not giving back, so to speak. So we do like to get them in milk as soon as possible.
I thought you were going to use the word freeloader.
I almost did, but I pulled back. So I pulled back a little bit.
So where I'm getting at with that question though, is those does, as they're, you see their udder for the first time, as they're, joining the herd as milking does, they've obviously, escaped the cut as a dry doe. How does that look when you say, stay or go? What's kind of your process with that?
Yeah. So, for those first fresheners, really at this point, throughout their life, we've assessed their general appearance. Some goats will, especially in our cases, we have four breeds here. And they're all the same, but they have, some breeds differences and also individuals in certain lines. And some of those differences are, say, like maybe some individuals go through some gawky stages at a year. So we'll kind of forgive them on some general appearance. But really, we're evaluating their general appearance from the time, they're, a few days old up until then. So if they've made the cut then it's pretty much the mammary system and will the milk. We will evaluate, dairiness and dairy strength prior to kitting to have what we feel is a pretty good idea of how they will work as a dairy goat. But, the mammary system is one thing. You can kind of maybe see a little bit on some things in the escutcheon there, but until they really, come into milk, so that's when we'll make those decisions, and we will give them time. Sometimes if they have a hard kitting, or we'll give them definitely some time to before we make any decisions. Because really, right now, this milk load that I brought today was the first time we were actually up in milk. So we still really need to, and we still have some goats to dry off that aren't due till late April and May. So we definitely need the milk. So we will give the time for those mammaries to develop over the next month or two before we make some selling decisions.
So my question for you guys, and this is a sidebar here, do you guys find they mature a little better when you freshen in October and they just don't get that extra layer of shag or thickness or fat when they do freshen as a first freshening 2 year old?
Yeah, well, sometimes they're just, the kids that are born in, say, late April and May, I just don't feel those age-wise and generally size-wise are it's prudent to breed them to be milking yearlings. So, the goats we breed to be milking yearlings are generally the February, March, and maybe very early April. So then after that, I do like to breed them out of season, because they can provide milk here during those winter months when most of the herd is dry. Because we have, now that we've really reduced the size of the herd, we have less what we call milk throughs, goats that will milk through purposely for, you know, 2 or 3 years to make sure we have milk in the bulk tank. So, you know, and we, at that time, we really haven't, we generally think their udders are going to be good. We haven't evaluated them yet, but they're providing us, you know, very valuable milk in the wintertime. That's generally high component milk when we really need it. So as far as their development, I just think it's a proper age, like at 18 months, because, you know, yearlings sometimes are too small, but by 2-year-olds, they're downright getting, you know, some of the newbies are downright getting fat. So we definitely like to do them at 18 months.
Okay. That's interesting there. Cause my wife and I have been developing theories on this, and we can discuss the Jedlowski's conspiracy theory hour later, but
it is interesting to see like their lactations too, because those first fall fresheners have really interesting lactation curves, and they'll peak out normally, but their peak is in December. And then the days start getting longer. So they actually have very good, strong first lactations. And if they're like, you know, have a great will to milk, you know, a lot of people are like, well, they'll be stale for show season, but not really. They'll actually, we show quite a few that are milking through or fresh in October that can be competitive in the show ring.
So I want to talk maybe just a little bit of balance on that there. Your October kids that you have, you know, you start freshening October 1st. Like, I think we've all maybe shown, if you've shown against Redwood Hills on a national show level, you've maybe heard the judge say, well, this goat's almost two. Oh, she's a yearling, but she's almost two, or she's a long yearling, as I call it there on that. Do you find that, you know, those October kids are thrifty as well there, and then they, you know, you call less of them, or like, what's the thought process behind that? I'm just super curious now.
I really like raising them because of the shorter day length hours. I do feel that besides milk production, it does affect gains and overall growth. So maybe we don't show them there that first year, you know, when they're 6 months old or whatever. It's kind of a weird age anyways. But as far as their thriftiness as a kid, actually, it's really good because, you know, I hate, you know, May, June babies just because, you know, the coccidiosis and, you know, they're being born right before the solstice and the days are getting shorter. So I would much rather raise kids in November, December than say, you know, June, July for the young kids. I think they're way healthier and more thrifty.
So are you finding that you are keeping more of your October 1 kids to go into your either show string or milk line there, or are you keeping more of those traditional kids is what I'll find there?
We don't there. So that out of season breeding, they're first fresheners, right? So freshening at 18 months. So we do keep less of those kids because they're still young. They're not kind of our, you know, more proven does. So we keep less of them, but we have kept. When I first started, actually, the out of season, we would actually like just crossbreed them all because, you know, we had dairies that would take the crossbred kids, the does. But, you know, sometimes, like, you know, a goat, a first fresh nursial kid, and you don't have maybe another chance, or if, especially if you're milking them through like some of our Saanens, you know, they milk through every other year. You don't have chances to get, you know, offsprings. And we had like some really nice does that, you know, they had a buck and then they milked through. And then before you know it, you never got a doe kid. So we started breeding them pure in hopes of keeping kids. But we keep less of them because they are out of first fresheners. And we can only keep so many every year.
Yeah, this is fascinating. And just one more question on this out of season breeding. Do you sink them into out of season breeding with lights, or do you use some hormonal help there, or?
Yeah, we've been doing this for like 30 years. So that was, you know, a lot of those years were before Cedars.
Right.
So we do a light program, and because we also need it for the bucks. So they're ready to work out of season because, you know, they're not in rut come, you know, April and May. So we do a light program, and we just finished it now. So we started it in late December, right about the winter solstice. And we do it for about 60 days. So that the light, it's just regular fluorescent lights in the barn, and they're on a timer. They go on at 5 a.m. in the morning, and they go off at midnight. So it'll simulate long days. We cut it off in here in late February. And in actuality, here in late February, the days are getting longer, but to the goats, all of a sudden, they got shorter. So basically, we create a solstice, just like our summer solstice gets the goats to come in heat 60 days later, roughly, or a little bit more. We create a solstice here in February. So 60 days later, in late April, early May, they'll start cycling. Their heats are pretty light, though. So traditionally, we have pen bred. And we have just, you know, we have done a little bit of cedar work along with it the last couple of years to try to guarantee kiddings, or sometimes we'll do a few of the adult goats in the main barns that aren't under lights, and we'll just do a cedar on those to, you know, try to maybe get some kids that time of year.
All right. I have a lot of questions and a lot of thoughts, and this is kind of mind blowing. But let's kind of go back to talking about selection here. So we've kind of agreed that we're not keeping a lot of those October 1 kids there. But looking at your kid crop that happens in the spring, I guess, how do you go? Where do you start when you're looking at evaluating them, especially across the spectrum of herds?
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, all of us herd owners, I mean, we have the ultimate decision. So, but the way I look at it, you know, I'm a big sports fan, so I do a lot of sports analogies. but in baseball, they have a term like used in scouting called, you know, was it a five-tool player? You know, a guy that can hit for average, a hit for power, he can field, he can, you know, he's got all those qualities. So I kind of do that for, you know, for my goats. I want a five-tool goat. So the five tools for a goat for me are: one is obviously milk. I mean, these are dairy goats. They're made to milk. So, that's one of the tools, show, you know, show. We love going to shows. I mean, that's a big part of our competition. And of course that aids in, kid sales, and especially buck kid sales. And then appraisal, that's, one of the five tools. Performance programs, it's great. It goes into our genetic evaluations, our sire summaries. So very important on, you know, moving the breeds forward. And then a couple others are, temperament. So dairy temperament is, well, one of those tools that we really select for, or I do, for, you know, you goats that are good. Dairy temperament's a few different things. So intelligence of learning to come in. Goats, you know, we don't want kicky goats with the milking machines on them. So, and then also just, we don't want mean goats. We don't want goats, you know, we have 40, 50, 60 goats in a holding pen. You don't want a goat bashing another one, especially, you know, we're bringing the pregnant goats in. You got those mean goats that bash another one. So dairy temperament's definitely one of the five tools. And the last one is, goats that can reproduce themselves. So not exactly reproduce, but have quality offspring. And of course, that takes some time to find out, because a doe's got to have, you know, milking daughters. So, but a doe like that has those, you know, the five tools are definitely, they're very high in most of those, or if all of those are really goats that we're looking to select and keep kids from.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Yeah. That's really good. Now, do you have a favorite tool, I guess, or do you have like a favorite stat if we were to compare it to baseball of those five?
No, I mean, they're all important, you know? So, I mean, you know, they all have their place. And I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you really, it's just like when their goat hits, like all of them, it's just like, this is just so, you know, so wonderful. So, you know, dairy temperament, I think, is really important, you know, just because there's some of us, you know, we have employees. So you know, they don't go to the shows or they're not part of that. And they maybe don't care about genetic evaluations quite as much, but they're the ones that have to do a lot of the milking. So you got those, you know, the kicky goats or the ones that are a problem, you know, that makes, you know, chores tougher, especially this time of year where I believe you said it, Lori, everybody's a little stressed or irritable or exhausted. You have nightly kid checks, you know, you want, you know, happy workers. So, you know, better behaving goats lead to happier workers.
That's definitely a different perspective to think about things as compared to the hobby farmer that does it all themselves.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm just amazed by like the hobby farmers that work, you know, full-time jobs and kit out goats. And like, it's pretty amazing, like how everybody does it and the passion to do it, because it's a lot of work.
Yep. It is there on that. So how many are you keeping back? Do you have like a mathematical formula or like how many are you guys keeping it back to look to freshen then in your kid group there? Do you have like a percentage of goats or like, is there like a magical number or is it like a feeling or like, what does that look like?
Yeah, we're kind of, you know, we're transitioning more to, you know, coming up with numbers that we can, you know, to give us parameters to work within. So like right now, like for say my, my Saanens, I will keep, this year, you know, 10 dry stock, you know, and that's, so that's between dry yearlings that, will freshen as 2-year-olds or freshen in the fall and then kids. So I will keep 10 and then, you know, work with that. So, unfortunately, all my saunas have been having bucks so far, so it might make my decision-making easy this year, but yeah.
There's always that silver lining to have a larger number of bucks. You're like, yeah, well, okay, it makes it a little easier to say who's going to stay and who's going to leave.
Yes, that it does. So, but, you know, there's a few that, you know, we want, you know, from – so, and there's, you know, some, you know, we'll – you know, getting back to the selection, of course we want from our very, I'm not a big, super big pedigree guy. We do want some from our top goats, but, you know, I really want really the, you know, if a goat's stayed along to freshen, you know, once or twice, I mean, she's got the pedigree. So it's more of just evaluating, the kids. And then there's some kids, you know, you've waited a few years and you haven't got a doe. So those are kind of on the top priority of ones that I might select. But of course, it's going to be the quality of the kid herself.
Gotcha. Any specific traits you're looking at that just give you the ick, for lack of a better term? So you see that in a kid and you're like, I don't care who your mom is. Like, you got to go.
Yeah. I think one of my gifts, I have a lot of weaknesses. Like, I'm not good on pedigrees. Like, there's people that come to our farm and they know the pedigrees on the goats better than I do. So that's a weakness of mine. But my intuition, I feel, is very strong. Like, some just have, like, I can feel it. And that's always made, I think that's why I've had like a lot of good success, especially with my Saanens early, is I've had the ability to select on a lot of gut intuition and feeling, the it factor that you say. But there is, you know, some other things, you know, if you're talking about like newborn kids or young kids, there's definitely certain things you can look at. I don't tend to look at maybe like front end assemblies so much for the first, you know, while, because those change quite a bit for me. But, you know, things like balance, you know, balance of the whole goat, balance of the back and rump and definitely the rib of the animal. You know, when you're evaluating dairy strength, rib's a big thing. And, you know, you can, when they first come out, you can feel the ribs and you can feel the angle there. And that doesn't change. I mean, the angles are going to grow, or the ribs are going to grow, but, you know, the angle's there from the start. So there's definitely things you can evaluate at a young age.
Gotcha there. So you picked out your kids, you breed them there on that, whether they're going for a regular heat or a regular cycle or a October cycle there on that. They come to the 2-year-olds there, you know, they meet all five of what you want, your Swiss Army knife there or your five tools there. I guess How do we get to say, hey, this goat gets to stay in the Redwood Hills herd for 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road there after that initial freshening?
Yeah, well, they got to, it's successful. You know, you gotta prove it. You gotta milk. You know, you can't. You know, we feed only grain in the milking parlor, but they do get free choice hay. So if you don't milk, you're going to get fat. So you got to milk it. You gotta have a good record. Successful in the show, yes. Appraisal, you know, there's definitely show and appraisal have a lot of similarities with working with the scorecard and a lot of the traits, but there's definitely goats that will be maybe more successful in the show ring, maybe due to their extremes in certain areas, where there's certain goats that are, you know, be stronger in appraisal, just be on the balance that they have, you know, as a goat. So, you know, we'll evaluate all those types of things over the time. And of course, hopefully they have the good temperament to do that. And they'll be really sweet. And that can, a few extra browning points might make the difference.
Are there times, Scott, when you'll have a doe that you're like, I'm not sure she checks all the boxes at this point? You know, maybe she's a 2 or 3 year old, maybe it's just her second lactation, but you take a chance and it's worked out for you? Or typically, if you don't see what you're looking for in those first 2 lactations or so, it really is, you just know it's not worth sticking around on.
Yeah, definitely. Especially a goat that's, you know, maybe she had a hard kidding, or, she's kind of, it was kind of like, you know, out of season, she had like just a single kid, but she's got, you know, a lot of the structure points, but maybe just, you know, some bad luck or something. And you have that feeling, and you do give them a second chance. You know, as we downsized a bit, it makes it a little harder. But if you really feel, it's special, and that's when trusting your kind of intuition and also your knowledge of those lines. You know, if you've worked with certain family lines for a while, you know, ones that are maybe a slower developing or how they will develop. And that can be a valuable tool. Like, I don't know pedigrees very good, but I do know like certain lines, like this line. I can't tell you who her great grandsire is, but I know this line is maybe slower to develop in a certain way. And that's I think is a very valuable traits to know, and maybe give them that extra chance if you feel like, and you have the room. And a lot of this comes down to your space and your time and what you have. You know, we're lucky enough to have a great staff and employees. So if we can, we will.
Well, I want to go on there and ask, and kind of as goats get older there, and, you know, I think about sometimes you have to cut from the old girls in order to bring up let the cream rise of the new girls type thing and make room for those new genetics. How do you do that? That's the scale, for lack of a better term, you guys are at, like, especially with the balance, and you've got everything in these older goats, but you know, you've only got so much room and so much time and so much patience for these younger goats too.
Yeah. So, well, you have, again, you know, sports analogies, you have your kind of like, you know, you got your players in your prime, your top players, like, say we're talking basketball. We have your, who's a top basketball player right now? It's basketball season. Say you got Shea Gillis Alexander. He's like the, you know, one of the top players, MVP candidate, or a Jokic, you know, he's like one of the best players.
Yep.
You know, you're going to keep those. I mean, those are your guys that are, or your gals that are going to be going for, you know, national champion. And then, you know, you have, you know, a few older ones, and you'll have your LeBron James. You know, they're still like, you know, they're in their later years, but they're still rocking it. And then you have the rookies, you have your Wembanyamas that are coming out, and they're like, you know, you just know they're the future. So you want all areas. Sometimes because of bad luck, or, you know, certain years, you have buck kid years, you know, you might not be have so many in an age group, but you want to keep it all, and you want to make sure that you are, you know, keeping for the future as well, and just not, you know, just keeping for the present, but you know.
Gotcha there. So I guess you have a veteran, an old crusty veteran on a bare minimum contract there on that, but you also have a new rookie again who's on his rookie deal. Like, how do you pick who gets that 12th or 13th roster spot? Like, you get what I'm saying there?
Oh yeah. So, it's that will be maybe based on you know, pedigree to a degree, and you know, just how they look. You know, we're you know, we're judges here, and we've seen a lot, so we kind of have a idea of who we know will develop, and then what we're looking for in our own breeding programs. So, you know, then there's like little, you know, when it comes down to it, when it's just hard choices, then it comes to little nuances. Well, like, got this son and she's got a Roman nose. I mean, she's perfectly everywhere, but you know, I don't really like that nose. Or, you know, maybe because I've been a dairyman for a while, but you know, teat placement is really important for me. So I want, you know, so there might be like small things like that, that will factor into those decisions. Like, oh, will I keep this one to be that undrafted free agent rookie to be able to make the team? So yes, and then. You know, I think it's really important as us as breeders too, is look at what the breed needs. You know, there might be certain things in the Alpines as compared to the Nubians that are, you know, maybe struggling with a little bit of as a breed. And if this goat does have that, you know, trait that maybe somewhat is lacking in the breed, you know, maybe that's really something, you know, we should work with.
I love that. Kind of like, almost like you're a keeper of the breed's future in a way by the animals that you choose to keep and sell. That's neat. That's a neat thought.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think all breeds, you know, go through certain variations of themselves, and, you know, there's things to definitely work on. So, you know, there's little things like that that might maybe come into the decision makings on selection.
So are you picking specific attributes? So go back to basketball here. Are you looking for like a 3-point shooter? Or are you looking for a low post presence, somebody that can rebound the basketball, somebody that's a wing defender? You know, are you looking at those specific attributes of the goat there and then saying, hey, that's what my focus is on there? If, you know, they don't have one of those attributes that I'm looking for, or, you know, they have a strike against them, for lack of a better terms, or a red flag, if we're going back to that basketball analogy, they're okay to select against?
To select against?
Or not really select against, or to not pick up or not sign onto your basketball team?
Yeah, I mean, I want it all. I guess I'm greedy, you know, you kind of want it all. But, I mean, for my own personal bias and preference, you know, I really want an elegant animal. I want a goat that just walks around the ring and, you know, has the general appearance that we talk about as she walks about the ring. So, I mean, that to me is just pure beauty when you just see that beautiful, you know, capacious doe, but just walks around with that, you know, femininity and elegance that we talk about in the show ring. To me, that's it. So that's, you know, like, you know, I see Michael Jordan, you know, in his prime, or Kobe Bryant, and those are the types that just kind of make your heart flutter, that are really, really, really great animals. So,
Scott, I do have a question for you too. When you're looking at younger animals versus older animals, and I think all of us have seen some animals that are just extremely mature as a young doe, like those yearlings that walk out, and you're like, man, I could convince myself that she's a 3-year-old. You know, she's just really mature for her age. Does that factor in what you're looking at? You know, over the years that you've worked with the number of animals you have in the different lines, do you have a preference on yearlings that look like a yearling versus yearlings that are really mature? And how does that maybe factor in?
That's a good question. And my answer is probably... going to be different than a lot of people's, or maybe an unpopular one. But, you know, I do feel, I do like, say, I don't want an over-mature animal, but I want a young, productive doe. You know, there's some people that say, but she looks like a yearling. And it's a case where she's just really, you know, very unproductive as a yearling. And well, you know, some, like, we know our lines and they do take some time, but I do think it's important. And I don't want an overly mature animal that's going to break down, but I do think you can have a goat that can be mature, productive at a young age, and can last and live a long, productive life if they have these traits on the scorecard of general appearance, you know, that can really, you know, they have the balance in their body, they have the correctness. So I think it's important. And I like a productive animal at a young age because, you know, when I worked as producer liaison for Redwood Hill Farm and Creamery and going out to these big dairies and producers, you got to realize a lot of these dairies, they're relying on our, you know, the show stock and the show breeders for replacement stock, or that's where they get, you know, their genetics from. And, you know, they're having a harder and harder time to be profitable. And, you know, sure, yeah, if a goat finally becomes productive at 3 or 4, great. But if you have to go through multiple pregnancies and something bad could happen, and wishing and hoping that they do finally, you know, yeah. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. But, yes, very much so. Thank you.
But yeah. At the same time, I don't want to sound like I just want a goat that's going to milk 4,000 pounds as a 2-year-old and then break down. No, I think you can have it all. And it's just, again, you're just kind of, it's a balancing act. It's always balancing to be able to have a lot of the things, the substance and the strength to go with the dairiness and milkiness to be able to live a long, productive lifetime.
And I would say that in a dairy situation with the number of animals that y'all have, that definitely is something you see. So I really appreciate that answer.
So I kind of want to wrap it up here. Scott, do you have any kind of final words or thoughts on selecting animals to move on to continue to build the future of the herd there, or any final thoughts?
Let's see. I mean, I know, I think we talked about, you know, quite a bit, and, you know, again, you know, we all have our own preferences and likes. And again, every, you know, from you, Cameron, to Laura, to myself, we all have our own specific goals. And just like, you know, the Jennifer, myself and Krista, we have all individual goals for our own personal herds. But again, just to remember the overall breeds that we take care of, they're dairy animals that we want, you know, productive goats that live a long life. So, you know, just, you know, and the selection for that, I think, will be better for our own herds, for the ADGA dairy goats and the dairy goat industry.
I love that.
Awesome. So I got some questions and answers, and Scott, you are more than welcome to chime in here. These are all listener submitted questions. And I think it might be good, considering Laura was a former judge and has been to a lot of goat shows. Scott, you are a judge still, and you've been to a lot of goat shows. So I want to ask you these questions, if that's okay. All right with you. All right. Yep. So Michaela writes in and asks, what gives you guys the ick, I-C-K, at goat shows? Like, what gives you the ick? You see it and you're just like, the ick.
Can I ask my kids what ick is? Because maybe I'm old. What's the ick? Is that like good or?
It's bad. It's bad. It's like.
Oh, the ick.
Yeah, the ick. Yeah, it makes you cringe.
Oh, icky.
Yes,
oh.
Icky. Yes.
At goat shows?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I heard Cameron, you saw a goat kid in the ring or something like that. So, I mean, that would be icky.
yeah, that was not fun.
that gives me the ick. Over uttered goats. I mean, that's definitely the ick. You know, people, you know, trying to, you know, over do things just to try to win, and it's not in the goat's benefit. I guess that would give me the ick.
I was just going to say the same thing. People that haul goats to a show with full udder, with a full udder, and then don't milk them out. I mean, like, I get it that animals will make some milk in the trailer when you're on your way. But when you park at the show and don't milk them out until, you know, 2 days later, that is total ick to me.
Yeah, very ick. So, yeah, don't bring over-udder goats in the ring at the national show.
Please. I was just going to ask. I think we all can agree that don't do that in Scott's ring.
My ick is when you go to a two-day show and you don't see people milk out their goats after the first day. That is my ick.
Mm.
And they're going to continue to do it because they don't listen to Goat Gab, or someone told them that it was okay. But we are going to continue to see that trend, and we just got to stop it. Milk your goats out after the first day. I know that they might not put back the same amount of milk as day one, but at the end of the day, it's so much better for udder health.
Yeah, for sure. And people don't realize, you know, the harm you do. I mean, is it really worth that one day of maybe looking better? And they're so uncomfortable, they usually aren't going to do better anyway. So they just that's no bueno.
You know, and I think people, especially new people, maybe don't really realize udders are not water balloons. You know, there is a limit to what they're going to put in that udder. So you're not going to get a bigger udder on a small udder goat by not milking it. I mean, it may look like that a little bit, but really for the most part, you're not.
Yeah.
All right. Last one here. This question is from Travis. Travis asks, what is the worst thing you can do in a showmanship class? And what is the best thing you can do in a showmanship class? This is for all ages, all levels, county fair, national level, whatever there. Whoever wants to take it first, I will let them go.
Go ahead, Laura.
Oh, gosh. I feel very I feel very overshadowed in the company of you two. But I will say, to me, the worst thing that you can do is overshow.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
I somebody who is like obviously overshowing, and you see it, I feel like, in the meat goat ring more than you see it in the dairy goat ring. So some of the kids who have transferred from meat goats to dairy goats, I see them doing things like standing real far away from their goats and fiddling with them all the time and doing everything they can to draw attention to what they're doing. When the converse side of that, to me, the best thing that you can do is to be not obvious. I mean, just be there. Present your animal so that the spotlight is on your animal, not what you're doing with your animal.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was inconspicuous, or, you know.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Yes.
Yes. It's a good one there.
I agree with those.
My worst thing that you can do in a showmanship class is go around the back of a goat. Or the worst, I got two here. The worst thing that you can do is have your parent on the outside of the ring coaching you as well there. And us judges see it. And I know it. And I call it out. So don't, parents, stop it.
Do you really call it out, Cameron?
Absolutely.
Scott, do you call that out?
Do I call it out?
Yeah.
I guess I don't call it out. But yeah, that's definitely, I don't like that. And like, some of those are the ones that, like, you can tell they don't like really want to be there. And those are the tough ones too. It's like, but their parents just want it more than they do sometimes.
I judged Louisiana a couple weeks ago, and I saw this parent, and she was clearly coaching. And I looked at her and I said, ma'am, I want you to know that your daughter is doing a great job, but she doesn't need your help right now. Okay. We're going to get through this class and I'm going to give her some feedback then. And then we'll be good. And she looked at me like I was crazy, but she's like, okay, like he knows what he's kind of doing too. So like, I think it's important for the parents on the outside to understand that it's okay to want to support your kids, But what it's not okay to cause a hullabaloo where you become a distraction.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to address it without, you know, making a big thing of it. But, you know, for me, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Cameron said walk around behind the goat. Don't step over your goat. I know that's tempting sometimes if you have a Nigerian. Don't do it. There's nothing that looks worse than a goat running between your legs, and it's just bad. Don't do it.
So I'll have to remember these tips too, because I'm not the best showman in the world, but I'll try to remember these. But for me, one of the really good things that I really appreciate, of course, you know, all the scorecards and, you know, showing the goat to its best ability and being inconspicuous, but, you know, is like just when a handler really has the knowledge of the goat, and not their own goat, because everybody's like trained to know the good and bad points. But like when you switch goats, and they really take the time to, or they not taking the time, but you know, they really look and know the animal, and that, you know, is just shows A, that they're really trying and they're really attentive. And they have really good knowledge of dairy goats, which, you know, is important in showmanship.
Yeah. When you see those exhibitors that make the animal that they switch to look better than the person that's actually brought that animal into the ring, that's when you know you really do have a skillful showman there. I would agree with
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Totally.
Laura, what's the best thing for you?
Just moving smoothly around an animal. I mean, when I have judged showmanship, and of course I don't do it at license or at sanctioned shows anymore, but 4-H shows, a kid who has that calm demeanor that keeps the animal calm and keeps them standing, you know, nicely, I will give a little more leeway for that. It's like the show attitude that the kid has. And I don't mean, you know, a snotty attitude. I mean, a good, you know, gentle, I'm going to do the best by this animal attitude. I'll give a little leeway on questions or maybe even a slight maneuver wobble to somebody that really does the best job with their animal.
I got two. One of the best things you can do. I love when somebody comes out, I'm not going to call it intensity, but I'm going to call it purpose. Moving with purpose. Look, every motion you make is with purpose there, as compared to being over-exaggerated, like Laura talked about. You can come out and not smile at all and win a class with me, because I know that you are moving purposefully. And every step you take with the goat or with you or everything you take, you can tell it's calculated in their mind. They can be the most intense person. They can be the least intense person. They can be smiley. They can be frowny. It doesn't matter. But if they're moving with purpose, that's somebody I want to show a goat. That's my first thing. The second best thing that you can do, this is me, is I love the chef's kiss in a showmanship class is an utter clip job. And it's not just going and taking the 30 blade last minute there. It's using the 40, using the 50, if you feel comfortable there on that, and making sure that you are highlighting or hiding the faults of that mammary system there within the clip job. And especially if you can plan, if it's a milker, on how to you know, purposely do that either for the next day, the day of show, or do it for the show as well there. That's what I really want to see if I'm going to notice you right away there. Like a good utter clip job to me says, hey, I'm not only here to show the goat, but I'm here in showmanship class, but I'm here to show the goat for the next day as well and for the big show. That makes sense to everybody.
Yeah.
That's an advanced skill, Cameron.
I know it is, and I've yelled at your kid about it before.
I wasn't going to say that. Darn it, Cameron.
I love Caroline still. It's okay. So those are our questions here for the day. Scott, thank you for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
It'll be fun to see you in Louisville. And that's got to be like both exciting and a little, I don't know, I would have some butterflies, I think, over that. I mean, that's a big deal. So I'm really excited for you.
Yeah, I'm excited. And we'll see. It will probably be my first set of reasons. I'm sure I'll probably have some butterflies, but it's going to be fun. That's for sure.
And Scott, where can the people find more information about the animals that you raise on your farm?
Yeah, so we have the best way to see all of the animals, the up-to-date charts, breedings, is our website. That's redwoodhillfarm.org. And that has all the Redwood Hill goats and the Vineyard View goats. We do, I've been less on Facebook, but you can find us on the Facebook at Capricopia Redwood Hill Farm. And we will post, and we will have, we'll be, you know, taking some pictures of those first fresh 2-year-olds coming up and posting them. And once we have goats for sale, we will post them on there. There's also a Vineyard View Facebook page as well. But if you want to get in contact with me, the best way is to email scott@redwoodhillfarm.org, or you could message me on the personal Facebook.
Awesome.
Cameron, if our listeners want to find more out about Goat Gab, where would they go to do that?
Yeah, you can listen to us on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, anywhere where you get your podcasts. We're on the Facebook as well. We're not as up to date on that as we'd like to be, but that's just what's going on with Laura and I are busy. But you can find us on there. And as always, listeners, thank you so much for joining us this week. And submit a question and answer question as well.
As Cameron said, Scott, thank you again for coming up here. We really appreciate your time. Listeners, we will catch you on the next episode of Goat Gab.